Devaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya. Srimad Bhagavatam, Canto 4, Chapter 14, The Story of King Venu, Text 16. Sa te ma vinashe vira prajana chema lakshanaha yasmin vinashte nripatir aishvarya avarohati. Sate mavina shetvira prajanam chema lakshanaha yasmin vinashtain repetir aishvrayat avarohati. Sate mavina shetvira prajanam chema lakshana yasmin vinashtain ripatir aishvaryat avarohati. Sate ma vinashet vira prajanam chema lakshana Ashtain Ripatir Aishvaryat Avarohati Man Vinashet Mira Om Shiva Lakshana Ashtain Ripatir Aishvaryat Avarohati. Pajanam Shimavakshana Sneed Vinastain Vipatir Prayadavarodi. Ladies, Satema Vinashedvira Pajanam Shimavakshana Yasmin Vinashtain Vipatir Aishwaryat Avarohati Shedvira Vinam Timavakshanam Yasmin Vinashtain Vipatir Avarohati. Sate ma vinashet vira Pachanam shema lakshana Vinvinashten vipatir Ashraya namarate. So, that spiritual life, te, by you, ma, do not. Vinashet, let it be spoiled. Vira, O hero, prajana, of the people. Kshema Lakshanaha, the cause of prosperity. Yasmin, which? Vinashte, being spoiled. Nripatihi, the king. Aishvaryat, from opulence. Avarohati, falls down. Translation purport by His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Please repeat. The sages continued. O great hero, for this reason, you should not be the cause of spoiling the spiritual life of the general populace. If their spiritual life is spoiled because of your activities, you will certainly fall down from your opulent and royal position. Purport. Formally and practically, all parts of the world, there were monarchies. But gradually, as monarchy declined from the ideal life of religion to the godless life of sense gratification, monarchies all over the world were abolished. However, simply by abolishing monarchy and replacing it with democracy is not sufficient unless the government men are religious and follow in the footsteps of great religious personalities. Om Jnana Timurandasya Gyananjana Shalakaya Chakshun Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Shri Vasudevi Gaur Bhaktivinoda Hare Krishna Hare Krishna 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 Hare 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 Rama Hare Rama 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 Hare Hare. In the Bhagavad Gita, Krishna says, Chaturvarnya Maya Shustam Guna Karma Vibhagushaha. Krishna explains that he's created four varnas, four social divisions in society. And these are the brahmanas, or the spiritual leaders and teachers, the kshatriyas, who are the government leaders, the vaishyas, who are engaged in economic development, for the benefit of the whole society. And then the sudras, the artisans and laborers and craftspeople, the ordinary workers. And we see that these aren't artificial divisions. We see in every society, these divisions are there. Even in our current Kali Yuga societies, like the United States, these divisions are still there. See, there are certain people who are involved in ordinary labor. They have labor unions and things like that to represent them. And then we see there are capitalists, different kinds of businessmen, farming people. Then there are government people, people who are in the business of protecting society, the police department, the military department, the government administration. And then there are the so-called brahmanas, the priests, the philosophers, the teachers. So we see these divisions are present in every society, and we can also note that people just don't understand what the real purpose of all these things are. Even if these different divisions were actually labeled as Brahmana, Kshatriya, Vaishya, Sudra, as they are in a Vedic society, that's still not the perfection of life. Bhaktisiddhanta Sarasvati Thakur and Srila Prabhupada spoke of Daiva Varnashrama, where these social divisions are not only there and recognized, but they're actually being carried out for the satisfaction of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that would mean that not only are people doing their duty according to their social position, but they're doing it in such a way that they're making spiritual progress towards becoming pure devotees of the Supreme Personality of Godhead. So that requires that the brahmanas, the spiritual leaders of society, are properly educated, that they understand the real purpose of life, and then it requires that the political leaders, they follow the directions of these great personalities, and they control in a proper way the Vaishyas, those who are engaged in economic development, and the Sudras, the laborers, so that everything works in a nice way. So in Vedic times, this Daiva Varnashram was actually established under the leadership of great kings like Yudhisthira and others. And the same system may have been present in a more degraded way in other parts of the world. We learn from the Vedic histories that Parsaram, he drove Kshatriyas, degraded kings, outside India. And Srila Prabhupada says they went to different parts of the world, and they settled there and mixed with the populations that were there. And so we can also see reflections of Vedic society in other parts of the world, but in a degraded way. As time passed and the Kali Yuga advanced more and more, the brahmanas became misguided, so they weren't able to give proper guidance to the kings. And then, of course, then the kings began to misuse their positions. As stated here, they began to engage in activities just for their own pleasure. They began to think they were the rulers, they were the controllers, everything was for their satisfaction. And we can see that reflected in the history of Europe, for example. If you go back 1,000 years or so, you'll see that basically it was the church, the Catholic Church, that was choosing the kings. They had what was called the Holy Roman Empire, and the Pope would crown the king, and the king would be subordinate to the church and the priests, the bishops, and they would control the economy. And it went on for some time, but as I said, because the church leaders were not properly educated brahmanas, the kings began to become independent from them. They began to revolt against them because they themselves, the brahmins themselves, were not acting perfectly, either in terms of knowledge or in terms of their practical activities. So the kings thought, well, why should I be subordinate to these people? So then they set themselves up independently. But because they weren't being properly guided, then they began to simply exploit the people for their own sense gratification. They built huge palaces. They taxed the people greatly. They conducted very expensive wars. And people really didn't like that, especially those who were engaged in economic development, the so-called Vaishyas. They were engaged in economic development, producing wealth for the society, and the kings would take all the wealth and use it to build, you know, big palaces. Like you can go all over Europe to places like Versailles in France and see these huge palaces. You know, these kings, you know, built for themselves from the tax money of the people. They lived an extremely opulent lifestyle. And it's nothing wrong with the king living an opulent lifestyle if he's actually doing his proper duties, but these kings weren't. So those who were engaged in economic development, the vaishyas, the capitalists, you know, they overthrew the kings in, you know, different countries. And then when these capitalists were ruling society for, you know, their own sense gratification, then they were also exploiting. So then, you know, there was, you know, the communist revolutions and socialist revolutions and things like that, revolutions of the working people who would try to take over, you know, society. You know, it's a struggle that, you know, still goes on today in maybe not under the name communism, although there are still, you know, communist countries. But so gradually we see that things passed. You know, the leadership passed from the brahmanas to the kshatriyas to the vaishyas to the sudras. And then the next step is just total anarchy, you know, which we see going on. You know, the Brahmins can't lead properly, the Kshatriyas can't lead properly, the Vaishyas can't lead properly, the Sudras can't lead properly. So then what's next? You know, total anarchy, you know, which we see, you know, going on, you know, in different parts of the world. You know, they call them failed states, you know, where the people just can't get together under any kind of leadership, so it's everybody for themselves. And that's a symptom of the advance of Kali Yuga. So Srila Prabhupada's explaining that here, how you know, the monarchies were gradually abolished. In some places of the world, they still have some semblance of monarchy. They've kept, you know, the monarchs. They don't have any real power anymore, but somehow or other, people seem to like it. You know, like in England, you know, they have, you know, a queen and a royal family. Srila Prabhupada said, and when he was president in the 1970s, he said, yes, well, they have this queen, but she has no real power. You know, it's all the real powers with the parliament, and she just, you know, whatever they laws they pass, she just signs. And he said, he also said, he made a, you know, pretty good prediction. He said, probably this queen will be the last, because she said her son, you know, this Prince Charles, he's a hippie, and the father, you know, her husband's also a hippie. So we kind of see what happened, you know, in England, you know, because they behave like hippies. You know, they became, in terms of their morality, you know, they, it, you know, it caused huge scandals, you know, for the royal family there. So that people are starting to say, well, why are we, you know, paying for this, you know, for all these escapades? You know, these divorces and affairs, and, you know, they're thinking, well, why are we paying, you know, these people for that? We can see that on television, you know, we can. So in some countries, actually quite a few countries, you know, they still have some semblance of, you know, monarchy. You know, the English royal family is still technically in charge in many parts of the world, like, you know, Canada and Australia, New Zealand, you know, they all have the queen on their money. But she doesn't have any real power, and she doesn't have any real knowledge. Of course, Srila Prabhupada did say that if the members of these surviving royal families in different parts of the world could be properly educated, that would actually be a good thing. You know, that, you know, if the world could again have properly educated monarchs. He said, even in democracy, they have to have a monarch. They call it a president, because actually no group can actually run without some single executive. If you look at any government, they all have a president, You look at any corporation, they all have a president or chief executive officer, because it's necessary. It's necessary in society that there be some kind of leader. So the difference is now they elect one king after another, they call it president or whatever, chief executive officer or whatever. But still, they have some, there's some need, for some kind of executive. And sometimes Srila Prabhupada's disciples would ask him, well, are we meant to reintroduce monarchy? And his usual answer was no. He said, well, you've got democracy today. That's your system. So the best thing is if, people, become, properly, educated, then they will elect, proper leaders. So if people start becoming Krishna conscious, then they will try to elect, Krishna conscious leaders. So but people, they're still very attracted, by this idea. I think that's why even in so-called democratic countries like the United States, people are fascinated, with royalty. They're fascinated with Princess Diana or Prince Charles, and or if they go to Europe and they happen to meet somebody who's a member of one of these practically extinct royal families, some prince or baron or something, they go, oh wow, this is, they think it's really grand. So there is some desire, for that, and they like, to visit the palaces. They like to see these things. So people still are pretty much, attracted to it. Of course, when Krishna comes to this world in his various incarnations, he usually takes the role of a kshatriya or a king. He's usually engaged in, the activities of a kshatriya, like when Krishna came 5,000 years ago, when he left Vrindavan, he went to Mathura and Dwarka and played the role of a king in the Yadu dynasty, subordinate king. So in this age, however, it's interesting that Krishna doesn't appear as a kshatriya. He appears in the family of a Brahmin, it's Lord Chaitanya. And we could say he's like the peaceful avatar. Because in this day and age, the kind of righteous violence that the Krishna engaged in his previous incarnations really isn't possible. We have up here, the painting of Lord Chaitanya raising his chakra, his disc, to kill Jagai and Madhai, because they had offended Nityananda Prabhu and Haridas Thakur. They had thrown pots at them, and actually Nityananda's head was cut and bleeding. So Lord Chaitanya was going to adopt the usual mood of Krishna and kill these personalities. But Lord Nityananda stopped him and said, no, this is the age of Kali. It's not your business in the age of Kali to do this. We simply... So in the age of Kali, instead of killing demons, the devotees try to kill their demoniac mentality with the weapons of the holy name, prasadam, the Krishna consciousness philosophy. Just like we were doing in our the Ratha Yatra festival, it's an opportunity to destroy the demoniac mentality of people. Krishna, he comes in his chariots and royal opulence like a great king, but he's not killing the people. He's giving them mercy. And giving them mercy in the form of his darshan, allowing people to see his form, allowing them to hear, you know, his holy name chanted by his servants, allowing them to taste his prasadam distributed by his servants. So it was really, you know, an interesting exhibition of, you know, the Lord's mercy. Of course, I was there. I was at the science booth. I had an interesting experience. They had put over my booth, where I was selling these science books, a sign that said elephant rides. So people were coming up, you know, like a mother with a child, you know, coming with a big smile on their face, expecting an elephant ride. And they would say, okay, you know, where's the elephant ride? And I didn't know what was going on. So they said, oh, there's a sign right over your head. It says elephant rides. So I looked, and yes, there was this big sign that said elephant rides. And people, dozens of people were coming, and they were getting very angry. They were getting highly upset, you know, that they thought there was an elephant ride there. They were about to kill me, literally. So we had to take the sign down. But anyways, but why do people like an elephant ride? You know, it's like a royal thing. You know, like the kings do. They ride on their elephants. You know, so it's an opportunity for them, you know, to feel like king for a day or queen for a day, or, you know, just like in, you know, high school, you know, they elect, you know, homecoming queen, homecoming king. Anybody was homecoming king or queen in their high school? No? Huh? Oh, Jai Garanga. Okay, yeah, he was the homecoming king. Right. So, people still like that, but in the present age, there are two possibilities that Srila Prabhupada mentioned, that, you know, there are these kind of like surviving, you know, monarchies. So if any of them can be educated somehow, by, you know, devotees who, you know, can give them Srila Prabhupada's books and give them some instruction, because there's so much instruction, you know, about the proper qualities of a leader. I once had a thought, there's so many books I would like to write, but I was thinking of one I would like to call Raja Dharma, where you kind of go through all Prabhupada's instructions about, you know, the qualities, you know, of a leader or a king. And, you know, just put that out there for people. Maybe somebody else can do it. But there's so much instruction here. So either that has to happen, or people have to become Krishna conscious. And if they do, they can elect, you know, proper kinds of people to serve as leaders in society instead of the kind of people that they're electing now. So that, you know, depends on us. You know, our ability to spread Krishna consciousness. And as I was mentioning in another class where this question came up about our relationship with government, it sort of depends upon our position in society. You know, like I was explaining, to put on the Rath Yatra, you know, we have to deal with government officials, city officials of various kinds. So it's very real, I think, and to do our preaching in different places, like the airport, we have to deal with, you know, the court system, the city officials, and things like that. So according to, you know, how effective we are in carrying out the mission of Srila Prabhupada, and then that will sort of determine what level of, you know, government, you know, we're going to be dealing with. Yeah, because as we expand our activities, naturally, you know, we have to deal with government, and they'll have some experience with us. In some countries, I was in Hungary recently, and they have quite extensive dealings with the government there. For one thing, they have a system where, you know, the people, when they pay their taxes, you know, they can check off, you know, on their tax form that they want, you know, like a certain percentage, I think it's 1% of their tax money to go to a certain organization. So they have the ability to say, I want my tax money to go to the International Society for Krishna Consciousness. So there's that, they have that arrangement with the government that each year they get, you know, the equivalent of hundreds of thousands of dollars, you know, from, and of course some parts of the government, you know, the parties, they want to stop that. So of course the devotees are in favor of the parties that want to keep, you know, this, you know, system. There was an election there recently, and the government party, the party that favors kind of keeping this system in effect, was elected. And then they also had a, you know, Rath Yatra there, and there's an interesting feature. Even when they have their cart, the canopy completely down, it's still too high for some of the trolley wires, you know, the electric wires that, you know, they run the streetcars with. So the government, you know, the city officials, they bring out these lifts. So as the chariot is going down, you know, one of the main streets in Budapest, you know, these government workers, they're working very hard. You can tell they're really into it. You know, they get ahead of the cart, they put the lifts up, they actually lift up the wires, you know, for the cart to go under. Yeah, so they're doing service. And then also there they set up a university that required an act of the parliament there, you know, to do it like a devotee college. So, I mean, depending on our position in society, how big of a position we're able to get in society, then naturally, you know, we'll have to deal with, you know, government and government leaders. And if they have some interaction with us, that means they're engaging in devotional service, you know, which is bound to purify them and, you know, purify, you know, the people. So I'll stop there. Does anybody have any questions, comments? Swavas.
Besides the fact that Pritamaraj came from King Vena, can you kind of say something about why would a person like King Vena be spoken about in the Srimad Bhagavatam?
Well, I think one reason is that's the actual history, and they're giving a history. And as you just mentioned, you know, it has something to do with the appearance of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in one of his incarnations, Maharaj Prithu. And we also see that. You could ask, well, why is Kamsa, you know, mentioned in, you know, the Srimad Bhagavatam? Basically, you know, for the same reason. It's connected with Krishna somehow. So everything in the Srimad Bhagavatam, somehow or other, it's connected with Krishna. And therefore, there are lessons there, you know, for us. You know, it's part of the glorification of Krishna, for one thing. And then there are also lessons for us. And, you know, we see, you know, Srila Prabhupada in his purports is explaining, you know, what those lessons are. Okay. Kriya Shakti?
Charles actually coming in contact with the devotees and getting a book, and he visited the manor one time, and one of the lady devotees, she was quite up on the royal news, and she greeted him, and he was recovering from a broken arm from a polo fall. And she asked him how his arm was, and he said, well enough to salute you, and he saluted her. But I think he's gotten books also, nonetheless.
Yes, as I explained, that's one of the hopes, that if you know, these members of these monarchies, if they can come in contact with, you know, devotees, get books, get some instruction, I mean, that can be valuable. They don't have real political power these days, however, but you know, they still have social influence. You know, they sometimes they're able to have an influence, you know, in some other way, you know, by, you know, the strength of their personality or their ability to speak out on certain issues, but they don't have, you know, the same kind of power that they did before these democratic revolutions that took place. There's somebody else. Okay, first you and then Amala Bhakta.
Hello, my name is Chandrika. This is a little bit immoral in a negative sense as far as meeting people in politics or high positions. My son is traveling with the Festival of India, the Gurukula Youth Tour. And when they went through here, I met him here in Los Angeles, and we were talking about the past and gurus and the whole, you know, ISKCON things. And I pointed out Kirtanananda to him in one of the magazines, and he was like, oh, I met him. And he was under the influence that Kirtanananda was a good guy. When I told him what Kirtanananda had done to me in Gurukula, the things that had happened, and who some of these gurus are, he was really devastated, where he was like, he was blown away. He was like, God, I wish I would have killed that guy right there. So we also have a negative, you know, these guys are still around ISKCON. My son, who's a third generation, almost 17, is meeting Kirtanananda at an ISKCON temple. That's pretty disturbing to me. Those things also get publicized in the media. And that is a very, very big downfall for ISKCON. Mm-hmm. I don't see any advancement since Srila Prabhupada left this movement.
Mm-hmm. What temple was that?
That was in New York.
Which temple? The Brooklyn Temple?
Mm-hmm.
Oh.
Oh.
Yeah. In other words, it's not. Is it the ISKCON Brooklyn Temple? Kirtananda's temple. Okay. Well. Well, I don't think that's good that they were introduced to him. Mm-hmm. Well, I think that's why. Well, well, these are the lessons. As I said, you were asking why, you know, King Vena is mentioned, you know, because there are these negative examples here, you know, so, yeah, no, we shouldn't have, you know, Venas in our society. You know, that's true. So, thank you for bringing that up. Amala Bhakta.
Yes, thanks for a nice class. Just wanted to comment on the question that Svabhas had raised as to why, you know, Vena was even mentioned in the Bhagavatam. And it's very important that persons who would read the Bhagavatam, especially people who are in a noble position or a royal position, to come to the understanding, or even a leader, even in ISKCON, to come to the understanding that no leader is above the Lord. No leader is equal to the Lord, and no leader should even inwardly accept the reverence and adoration and distinction that is really only deserving by the Lord. And Vena, of course, he forbade any form of worship except worship of himself. He forbade any form of sacrifices except for himself. And he put himself above and beyond everyone and above the Supreme Personality of Godhead. And that tendency is there in all of us because, as we know, we have come into this world in order to feel a sense of lordship. And when we get a little taste of it, it becomes intoxicating, and we therefore want to expand it and develop it, only to finally realize that it leads to not only the harm of other human beings because we're not working in sync and in harmony with God's laws and will, but also to our own personal destruction. So as you yourself said, it is a lesson, and that lesson is that the highest of kings must remain inwardly humble and take shelter and guidance and direction from the Supreme Lord and administer in that understanding and in that prayerful mentality.
Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.